Welcome back to NLP's Young Professionals Network podcast, Growing in the Green Industry. Today's podcast is powered by your Young Professional Network partner, Steel. Steel makes a full line of gasoline and battery-powered outdoor power equipment for the demanding landscape professional. Find yours at steelusa.com. Your hosts of today's episode include myself, Miles Caparis from Include Software, Luke Melangrano from Mariani Landscape, Neil Glatt with Grow the Bench, Brett Lemke with RM Landscape, and Macy Robinson with Landcare. How's it going?
Good afternoon.
Look at good that. Afternoon.
Indeed. We're all there. And we have a guest today. So
I'm going to introduce our guest, Marshall Jones, who's a two-time Virginia Tech graduate with an associate degree in agricultural technology and a bachelor of science in landscape architecture, along with a turf grass management minor. My goodness, Marshall, that's a lot of schooling right there. He was one of the few students who was lucky enough to attend the NCLC for 4 years. He started landscaping when he was around 14 and now works for Valley Landscaping in Christiansburg, Virginia as an account manager. In the next few years, he plans to receive a license as a landscape architect, and a long way down the road, he hopes one day to design and construct golf courses. Welcome, Marshall.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Great intro.
Well-educated person we have here today, folks. Well-educated, knows, and the breadth of all that, from ag to landscape architecture to, your company is lucky to have you. You got all the knowledge in your head.
I think they're lucky to have me. That's for sure.
There it is. Confidence. We'll talk about confidence too today, I think, with Marshall.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool, man. Well, tell us a little bit about the path. I mean, I'm curious about the multiple degrees. What sort of how do you go that way?
So it kind of started off with, and this wasn't even mentioned, was I started off at a community college for a year in architecture. I knew I wanted to kind of move into design and kind of, you know, create and establish things. And then, you know, once I kind of got into the architecture world, I was like, this is not for me. Then I discovered the agriculture technology. And at first it was kind of like, oh, this is just, you know, I can get a quick degree under my belt and kind of get into Virginia Tech and kind of move along. And then I kind of discovered within that program, I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. I'm learning a little bit horticulture, learning a little bit about turf grass and maintenance, irrigation, all this kind of stuff. And then, you know, that kind of led me getting into one of my first jobs at a golf course. Once I kind of got into that, and I was like, oh, this would be cool. And then, you know, I heard about the landscape architecture program. And then, you know, from there, I was just like, you know, I think my end goal is to design and build golf courses one day. And so that's when I moved into landscape architecture, and that was a 5-year program, did it. So all in all, eight years of school without a doctorate degree, but, you know, we're making it work. That's for sure.
I don't know. You could call yourself a doctor. I don't think anybody will worry about that. Right. Just go for it.
Is anyone a doctor on the call?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Okay. Yeah. You're right. No. Dr. Jones is with us today. I suppose that does share a typical path, a very similar path to many people, about just figuring it out along the way. And what is it that, I can appreciate that your curiosity has led you in a couple of different directions. And it sounds like you've landed well, and you've got a good goal in mind there.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely.
So what has it been like going through like that much school? What's one thing that you've learned or what have you learned that really impacts your day to day that you think that helps you out a ton?
That is a good question, Miles. I think there's always something that's new to be learned every single day, whether that's in a classroom or out in the field. Every single day there's a new challenge. There's something that, you know, you're going to take on. You don't know how you're going to do it, but that's just, you know, that's kind of a part of life. And college was a little difficult for me. I had to work full-time through school and balancing a job and then classes on top of that. That was probably the most difficult thing, but I think all in all, it taught me more so about time management than anything else. And I would say that's one of my greatest strengths, but then, you know, just having to kind of work through that and then transition back and forth between classes. I can't really sit still for too long. You know, and I'm lucky to have this job now where I'm half in the field, half in the office. I can crank out my designs and send it to our clients and then go out there and make sure our guys are making sure they're doing what they're supposed to do. And I think the schooling aspect, the agriculture technology program was definitely hands-on. It definitely allowed me to learn some contracting, learn some design, learn some irrigation assembly. I mean, we did just about anything that you can think of in the landscape industry. And then go into landscape architecture, that kind of opened up a whole new world towards like sales, design, and how to put all the pieces of the puzzle together.
The account manager role is kind of different at every company, right? And it sounds like you really are touching a lot of different pieces. What is your day-to-day? You mentioned design, you mentioned spending time with the crews. What else are you doing?
Yeah. So, every day is different. As I'm an account manager for our construction side of things. So, you know, we meet clients, you know, 2 to 3 times a week and try to come up with solutions for what they have on their projects. So typically in the mornings, you know, we get here 6:30, 7 o'clock. We have a meeting with our crew leaders to figure out, you know, what machinery needs to go to each job site, where everyone's going. We have 3 different account reps, who's on whose job, where are they going, what do they need. And so, there's a lot of moving pieces, and that's just like the first initial hour. And then 8 o'clock turns around, and then, you know, you face any problems that you go along the way, weather, all that stuff. I usually keep my window of meeting clients early morning to mid-afternoon. And then once I meet my clients, back in the office, putting together estimates, designs, and then that's about it for the day. And that's usually the standard. And during those visits between those clients, I'm out in the field, I can go by, and most of the time the job sites are relatively close to another client, so I can just hop over there, check on the guys, see how they're doing, move to another job if I have 2 or 3 going on, and then head back to the clients or head back to the office. And that's typically almost every single day.
It is a real hustle and grind, right? And we've all had it sit in that seat or have sat in that seat, and especially I think on this group in that account management piece. And I can appreciate that, those degrees and then the versatility of, you know, you'd like to think most anything that comes by you, you've dealt with from a design, production, the agronomy of what we're dealing with. And it's often the folks like, you know, and it was said, I think Phil Allen said the other day, right, Luke, like Ed, you know, shows the Ed Ferner, right, with you all over there, just shows the story of want to be design, but how he's really been able to craft that into a strong client relationship and management of the crews. And it can go much further than just you have to sit and draft or be so client focused or production focused.
Exactly.
I think it sets you up so well to be an awesome landscape architect one day. I almost wish it was it's a requirement to go work under somebody for so long, but I wish it was a requirement to go work in a maintenance or like some type of operations day to day, like you're doing right now, because it makes you understand your designs better. You're like, oh, I'm not gonna, you know, go design it this way. That one, the plants don't work, or you know, you can't get equipment down there, because as you're building it, you see like, oh, it's hard to get equipment down here anyways. So I think that's really awesome. You've seen other sides of it and gives you more of a broader aspect whenever you're designing it. I think that's amazing for you.
Luke, you would love, right? You would love a landscape architect that Marshall is going to become, because he's going to Macy's point, he's always going to have construction in mind. It's the worst when they're like, I think it can be built. You know, Luke, your team, go.
Well, figure out how to build that's, it. You know, you kind of touched on it already, Brett, with what Dr. Allen was talking about, and in regards to Ed, and you know, Ed came to Mariani and And we've crafted a role within our organization that we have landscape architects now who work on the maintenance side. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think a lot of students come out of college with those landscape architecture degrees, and they want to go work for that firm that they're only doing those big DB projects. I mean, those are the quote unquote, you know, big sexy projects that are out there, but, and they aren't always as drawn to the maintenance side, but you go work for a company that focuses on that. And it's a growing sector of our business of having landscape architects within our, maintenance section of the business, where we're going out and, I mean, they're selling hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of work to clients just on existing landscapes. And I think it's an overlooked avenue of revenue and opportunity for people within this industry a lot.
I always found myself in this challenge as an account manager. Then you go to a property and they want a renovation. And I always thought it's really important, and I still do, like, you got to know what you're talking about, that the design, the flow, okay, this front entry needs refreshing. How would you do that? And that background that Marshall, that your experience in offers well. But I also know that not every account manager has this skill set. And so I'm always curious in how they bridge those gaps. And, you know, I think Macy, I know Landcare, right? You hire account managers that may not have a landscape or horticulture background, but yet are out there servicing clients. So how do those that don't have that background sort of excel when the client says, hey, I'd like to look at the front of this building in a refresh?
I think it's a lot of experience. I experienced it yesterday with someone who's in production that's moving into account management. They just do operations, and it's just telling them straight up, I gave them the design program that they needed. It's like, the best thing you can do is take your own yard and just have some fun with it. And so just honestly throwing them in there, and it's just ask questions. I think everyone's always learning and evolving, just asking tons of questions. And we work in the people business. And so as long as they're a good person, the customer is going to like them and understand that they're learning the horticulture side of things, and vice versa. Like, I came into it knowing a lot of horticulture stuff, but I had to learn the business side of stuff, like how to bid stuff. People would ask me for a price right there on the dot. I'm like, I need to go into my bidding system. I have no idea. Now I'm like, oh, labor costs this much, we'll do this. And then plans are around this much. Like, I can spitball something now on site. So I think it's both sides of learning and just being honest with everyone.
And to kind of go with more what you were asking too, Brett, it's, you know, for an account manager who maybe doesn't have that type of experience or isn't as knowledgeable, and, you know, have the background of, say, a Marshall who, you know, has or is working towards landscape architecture and things like that. I mean, if you're in a big enough company and you can put somebody in that role to work within your maintenance department. And we're a bigger company. So we have two landscape architects who strictly work on these renovations, these enhancement opportunities for our clients. And we've grown it enough this year that we're probably going to add a third and maybe even a fourth for next year. And they're constantly busy. And it's something, you know, I think if you can make your company push that, you know, that those enhancements that you want to grow, I mean, they're great revenue, easy jobs. I mean, you walk on any site. I mean, you can, whether you're commercial or residential, I think you can walk on just about any site and look at it and say, you know, we need to do something here to fix this place up and improve the curb appeal and the landscape here. I think if you're in a smaller company and maybe you can't afford to bring on a landscape architect for your maintenance side of the business, maybe you slowly start to transition somebody from your DB team, or you know, if you don't have any on staff, you know, work with an outside, you know, a subcontractor who can do that type of stuff and provide those better answers for your clients.
Yeah. And for me, when my first job was with a really small company, I was doing sales, but I called myself an account manager and I was managing jobs and I didn't know anything. Right. And I was fortunate to find that vendors offered great courses. So, you know, the hardscape guys, the lighting guys, they put on free education at their facilities that you could attend and learn the technique and the product and gain the confidence. And, you know, within 2 weeks of attending my first landscape lighting class, I was selling a $3,000 landscape lighting job to an existing customer. And within, you know, a month of my first hardscape class, I was selling a $10,000 patio. And then for plant material, it was like, help me understand the options for my palette in this climate, right? Like in the right cost. And then it's mix and match, and it's a lot less overwhelming than here's the supplier book and 1,000 different varieties and sizes, right?
Marshall, you know, with that, the formalities of landscape architect program, but then the speed of what you need to do in the field, what's been sort of your shortcuts, or how have you evolved from when you come out with a degree? Like, okay, when you do a drawing, like you put the paper in front of you, you put the little T scale, and now it's just like, no, faster field, right? Efficiency. So what are the tips and tricks you've learned?
Oh, I just, you know, when I first started, you know, there was a lot of moving pieces. The first project I got was an outdoor kitchen with a patio. And then I'm sitting here thinking, you know, have I ever designed an outdoor kitchen or patio? So I'm sitting here looking at it and I'm like, I don't even know where to begin. And that's where you can rely on your other account managers who have that experience, or your subcontractors who know how to put it together. And you can be like, hey, you know, I got this project. I'm kind of trying to understand the ins and outs and everything. And that's the biggest thing, is, you know, opening it up for questions to everybody, like, just so you can kind of I'm a visual learner. If I can understand the picture, understand what they're saying, I can put the pieces together. And, you know, the more I do those new projects, the faster they come later on. So most of my drawings are in AutoCAD or hand drawing. I typically do everything hand drawing, and then I'll throw it into AutoCAD once I'm done. Hand drawing, to me, gets it on the paper faster. That's what we were taught in at Tech in the landscape architecture program. Just put it on the paper, adjust it, erase it, throw it in the trash, do it again until you understand that, hey, you know, you're going to mess up until you understand how every piece of the puzzle fits. And that way, when you sell it and you finally have that final product, and as an account manager, when you go out there and start producing that work, if you see that 1/8 of an inch hanging off of the countertop, you can be like, hold on, no, that's not right. There's something here that's messed up. Either you guys missed a cut or I missed a measurement. Something's not right here. And then you can adjust that on site rather than they put it together and then final product's messed up and it's incorrect. You have an unhappy client. Like those are the pieces that you need to move forward. And I think, you know, everything's a learning experience. So for instance, that outdoor kitchen, you know, I took 2 weeks to assemble and put together in a drawing. But those 2 weeks, I learned something new about it every single day. And then if you ask me any detail about that outdoor kitchen, I can tell you anything about that, about the grill, what grill we got, what countertop, what type of block we used, how we cut it, what we used to insulate it, gas, where is it running? And like, it's just those things that you don't really learn in landscape architecture school. You know, you learn how to design and put things together, but to put all those blocks, the countertop, your screws, your cabinetry, your grills, and how everything lines up, even outside to the veneer stone, how much it's going to overhang. I mean, those things you learn along the way. And now I understand, I can sit there and look at and visualize how I'm going to put that together. And to me, that makes me a better designer. That makes me a better drawer. I can put it on AutoCAD a lot quicker now that I know about this one product. But the thing about products is there's 1,000 different products. There's 1,000 different outdoor kitchens and patios that you can do. And so now you understand one. Well, most of them are about the same assembly. Might just tweak it a little differently here and there, you know, depending on if you're doing paver, if you're doing flagstone, whatever. Typically they're all the same. You have to excavate, put it together, and bam, you have a patio. But it's just those learning curves along the way. So take the time to, you know, understand what you're trying to sell. That way if your client has any questions, you can just come back and be like, well, this is why I did it.
It crosses that trust level with that client. You know, either you're not comfortable designing it, or this is your first time ever installing it. And so when you can get you can match yourself to a customer that really trusts you well, then, and is willing to let you learn, make some mistakes, but you really will see it through, then that's how we build. And right. And everyone, I can only think the history of our company 50, you know, 48 years ago, the first few things we did, like, well, I have no clue, but we'll try it. right? And, you know, ones that went well and ones that didn't go well. And we have a mix of both, but they give you those experiences. And so I could appreciate, I love that about our industry, is that if someone's just interested and curious and they, you know, you can build that relationship, then, you know, the world's your oyster. We're going to go do something pretty cool.
What, so what does that look like? How did, so when you're learning, how did your leadership support you, and what did that support look like from your bosses, I guess, or like your managers?
I think I had, from other internships and interns like coming in, I feel like some people don't have that level of trust yet in that intern or that new hire until you see what they can do. And, you know, I think everyone came in and looked at me and was like, you know, there's this tall guy who just graduated college. He's been in there for almost 8 years. Why did it take him so long to do this? And, you know, what's his deal? But I think, you know, the more interest that you show, I think the more they start to build that trust in you. And so the more questions you ask, no matter how annoying it is, I mean, I will ask someone until I fully understand. And whether I ask that one question, if it's not answered, I'll reword it to where, you know, I can kind of get the answer that I'm looking for. You know, as long as you show that interest that, you know, hey, I'm trying to do this, but I don't know how. I think the upper senior leadership can look down on you and be like, oh, okay, this guy actually wants to learn, wants to put in that time to understand how this all works. And so I think I've only been here 7 months, and I think, in my opinion, I think I've gained a lot of trust with a lot of the employees that are here, just because, you know, I care about my work. I ask a lot of questions. I'm very interested. I'm very curious about, you know, what's going on. And, you know, there's always room for improvement for myself, but that doesn't mean that whatever company hires me, that doesn't mean that there's improvement for them as well. Like there's always something that can change and, you know, push that company to the next level. And so I'm always just kind of thinking of, you know, how can this company help me, but how can I help this company as well?
So do you find that are those like more done in like formal meetings? Like, well, you're where you'll meet like one-on-one with like your manager, or is it like just more casual conversation where you guys are out in the field just kind of chatting away? I'm kind of curious on just like what your support structure looks like, kind of being new to and out of school, right? And right, like in more in the workforce.
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. I mean, every week we have a production meeting, and then, you know, that's all of our account managers, and then we all get together and just kind of talk about what's going on, based off of good customer reviews, bad customer reviews, you know, what projects are in the pipeline, what our schedule looks like. You know, we got snow removal coming up. And then, you know, then we have just the one-on-one where, you know, you sit down in the office, and whether, you know, all our doors in our offices are open, you know, if anytime you have a question, you just go in there and sit down. When I first started, I probably sat in our senior account manager's office for probably 4 hours, just trying to figure out that same outdoor kitchen. And just, you know, those one-on-one interactions, I think you learn more from than the actual meetings itself, just because I think there's, you know, you're building that chemistry with that fellow person, but you're also getting the one-on-one answers and the details that you're looking for.
Are you managing a team right now in your role, like the crews report to you, or is that a production manager's role?
No, that is me as well. We do have a, and like you guys said, every account manager is different. You know, we do sales, but we also do production. We have a production manager. They're more focused on inventory or equipment and just making sure everyone, and we only have one of them for 8 different crews. And so, you know, he's got his eye on the bigger prize, while us account managers, which is 3 of us, you know, we typically have 1 to 4 different projects going on at a time. Just depends on what pops up in the schedule. But, yeah, we do us at account managers here at Valley. We do sales, we do production. We do a little bit of everything.
So how you know, coming out of school, but not as much of the experience. I guess where I learned a lot was the leadership of people. And so what has that experience been like for you between the work you've done and the people you have to lead?
Yeah, I mean, that's always a learning curve because you have 8 different crew leaders here and each one is a different person. They have a different way they work. They get the final product done, but in their own way. Just trying to understand the different personalities. And, you know, with my job experience through college, you know, I had some assistant superintendent and management roles that kind of helped me along the way to understand that, you know, everyone's different. You can't, like, you treat everyone with kindness and respect, but sometimes some people need a little nudge every once in a while to kind of, you know, understand, like, hey, this is what we got to do. Let's try it this way. Let's try reapproach. And the people that kind of get discouraged, you know, you kind of have to build them back up. Like, hey, man, you know, you're doing all right. Just keep it going. Keep working. Focus on the end goal. You know, we'll get these little pieces figured out or whatever issues you have along the way. I would say any management role that goes for anywhere. I mean, retail doesn't have to be landscape. I think talking to people is a skill in itself. And I think over the course of college, whether it was in presentations or working with other people outside of Virginia Tech to management positions at work, like I said, retail, at a restaurant, whatever, I think there's always something to learn and there's different ways to kind of approach that. And I think everyone has every industry has their own way of talking, but to work with people, you know, you learn that through all those different experiences. And I take that. I like what I've learned throughout the years. It's really good.
Luke and Macy, your thoughts on that too, right? I mean, you know, Luke, you maybe consistent been in that role. Macy, you've all experienced these things too. So I think that's a really big part. We rely on our experiences and or like the education or just that piece, but then it's a whole new frontier when you have people, and especially when you have new people coming in your organization that you haven't felt out. What have you all experienced when it comes to just really gathering the group and leading them through?
Well, yeah, I think, I mean, Marshall, he pointed it out already. I mean, everybody's kind of different. And so you got to just, that's always the battle and the challenge is learning, you know, each person's way of doing their job, how they like to be communicated to and how they lead their individual teams and stuff. And naturally what always seems to happen is you kind of get it typically takes about midway through the season to kind of get that under control, especially with newer people. It's great when you constantly have returning people year after year. And so you build that relationship with them and you build, you build a really good working relationship with them, I should say. And things seem to run really smoothly, but, when you're going through new people, it's always a challenge. And, I mean, I think, kind of like Marshall said at the beginning, you know, you're constantly always learning new ways and to work with people, and it's good because, you know, it when I start to work with some of these guys, I like to communicate with the other people on my team who are in leadership roles, because some of them have experienced that, and it just gives me a new way of looking at things, and maybe they've experienced it before, so I don't have to go over those, you know, make those mistakes or, you know, go over those hurdles that may slow things up a little bit.
We actually do a predictive index, kind of not really a test over here at Landcare, but you do one of those before you start working here just to kind of get, you know, how to work with you and like your management style. So it's interesting, like looking back on some of them, like how spot on. Same time, same thing that Luke said. It's just getting out in the field with them. You'll see, you know, how people work. You throw them in a snowstorm together, and you're gonna figure out who's gonna show up and how hard people are gonna work. but it's cool seeing it, looking back on those.
Well, we've experienced a tremendous, my company, and I think we've seen it in the industry, just a lot of new fresh faces have come in and out of this business this year. And ideally, how do we keep them, retain them? But you know, some of the new faces that have arrived have been really good people, and they're really excited about what we're doing. But it constantly keeps you on your toes. And you like to think, well, I want to keep this person in this role. They're really good and strong, and we've developed a good relationship, but then they want to be promoted. And so there's, you know, you have to stay fluid and sort of roll with it. And, you know, I don't know if that's been, has that been a challenge for you all, Marshall, this year at all with just the hiring and the holding on people, or you've done pretty well through that?
Yeah, I think finding laborers that want to work is just a challenge in itself. And then after that is making sure, seeing if, you know, if they're okay with their position, you know, do they want to move up? Are they happy with where they are? Everyone's different. Some people are comfortable just being a crew member for, you know, 20 some years. You got the young guns that want to come in and move up the ladder very quickly. I think, you know, we've lost some guys over the year. You know, we've got some new ones in the pipeline coming up, and that, I think that's just how it goes. You just got to work with what you got until something better comes along, and then hopefully you can keep that that good piece and try to make the best of it.
That is the optimism you need to hold on to, no doubt about it. It's been a whole year of sort of just challenges and peace to it, and those that have sort of let them take you over like that. And we've been in a lot of just development conversations about, you know, the burnout piece, and this is happening to them versus them making something happen. And so it's, you know, we've all had to struggle with that one. And, you know, I wouldn't wish this year again for any reason, but I do want to take a lot of lessons learned from here and say, how do we make a better company from this one? And if it exposed it and it didn't harm you or hurt any of our businesses too deep, then yeah, you live for another day. Somewhat live, reasonably live.
Marshall, what gets you up in the morning? What makes you excited?
Great question, Miles. I do like to sleep, so it's really hard to get out of bed in the morning. But I think one thing that pushes me is, you know, I had 8 years of college, and I think that desire to finally get out in the workforce and not have to go to class in like 3 hours after I get into my shift is, you know, I think that's one thing. I'm really excited to work and, you know, come up with my job. I get to come up with new designs and new solutions every day. And I think that's one thing that I'll always cherish, that there's always a new way to look at things and to come up with a solution. And I think that's one thing that really gets me excited when I come to work every day is, you know, what client out there has some tricky challenge that, you know, they need a solution for, and what can I come up with that's reasonable, you know, within their budget. And, you know, from there, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but sometimes you get that magical customer and you're like, oh, okay, this is cool. I can work with this.
Mm-hmm. Do you work, how collaborative is your work across other people in your company? Like, are you guys working on things as a team, or you generally find yourself working on this stuff solo?
Definitely a little bit of both. I mean, a team as in, you know, if I have a question with a product, you know, I can go to our senior leadership and be like, hey, I'm having some issues with this. But a lot of times, you know, we each have our offices. I have my own computer. I can do the research myself and kind of figure out what I need. And if I still have any doubt within that design, you know, I can go up to senior leadership or just get other people's opinions. Like, hey, what do you think about this? It's always a team effort. But sometimes, you know, you got to be a leader and kind of push yourself to get that work done and understand what you're trying to do.
What do you, you're just starting, but what do you prefer? Do you prefer like the moments like where you're kind of in your zone working alone, or do you prefer like collaborating back and forth, you know, on projects?
Yeah, that's a good question. I, through school, I definitely did not like collaborating through projects, just because I couldn't stand to hear people tell me like, this is weird. But you know, I have much more respect for it now, just because, you know, they helped me out and figure out like, why do you have it this way, not like this? I'm like, well, mainly because I didn't think about it. But I do prefer to just kind of, you know, once I'm in my zone, you know, I can just pound out so much work. You know, you don't have to talk to me. I don't have to talk to you. We can get all of our stuff going on at the same time. But a little bit of both.
Yeah, we all love that moment where you could actually get your own work done. Like, that exactly. Is just a dream of mine to have the door could actually stay shut, emails, no phone calls, and just, I don't think, I probably only have like 2 days worth of work, but it takes me like a year and a half to get through it, right? So it's that piece. But and I realize, you know, when you have people underneath you that like their work is your work, you have to integrate. And so, you know, Miles, I think it was an interesting question, but just like that team approach. And so either, you know, across the org chart or up and down in the org chart, which ones sort of work hand in hand to it. And it was a good, I'm reflecting on that one too. So, right. How do you engage that group to it? But then that's what I thought quarantine days were sort of nice, because you did get a little separation and quiet time and just get some crap done.
Yeah, I mean, I live at that question pretty much every day in my job, because we're fully remote, so I'm working from home. So it's not like I have people like right next to me or an office away. It's a lot more, I have to be a lot more, purposeful in my interactions with and communicating. So, and I definitely miss that.
Yeah, you get a new voice, you talk to yourself in a different, I mean, there's a couple ways of like, it's like solitary confinement, right? And so you get creative, right?
Yeah, you don't need to talk about the other voices in my head, but yeah. That's another podcast.
Marshall, what's your thing? You've obviously done a lot of designing, which means you spend a lot of time just staring at a studio desk or a computer, either way. Like, what's your, do you have a playlist you go to, an artist, a podcast? Like, do you listen to classical, like rock music? what's your thing? Because tons of people that listen to this, and landscape architecture, I've just experienced it. So like everyone has a different niche. Like they just listen to music or they just do nothing.
Answer carefully. Oh, yeah. It should be growing in the green industry no matter what.
That's what I was gonna say. I was like, well, obviously in ALP, you know, gotta hear you guys talk. I have Spotify on my computer. It's on probably 24/7 if I'm at work. I would say hip hop jazz is my go-to. It's just like mindless music. You got some cool beats and you're just vibing to it. You're just doing your designs. You're putting your numbers together. That's probably my go-to. That or some Barry Manilow every once in a while.
That's range. I found the XM radio station Turbo. It's been there for a while, but it's like 2000 like hard rock. And I am just having a blast right now, guys. I mean,
oh yeah.
I generally don't listen to music in my truck. I'll just drive places just quietly and think, but like, I've had to keep this on. It's fantastic.
So Marshall, what are your biggest fears right now, or things that you're trying to work on? Professionally.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, you can turn this into a counseling session too, but I don't know. You guys can chip in too, but
that's a great question. I think one of my biggest fears is not meeting my sales goal for the month. And I've hit it every single month since I've been here. For some reason, if even I'm like a penny short, or like I just have this small anxiety moment where I'm like, I'm not good enough to do this. I would say that's probably one of the biggest fears, is just not meeting the goals that people have given to me. Yeah, absolutely.
Neil, I feel like Neil's just like ready to go at this. No, that's real though.
It's super real. In fact, I'm a little bit anti-commission, because I think that there's a lot of anxiety that comes with goals and commissions that stops people from performing at their best, but that's probably a subject for another podcast.
Yeah, probably. I don't know. Well, how do you deal with that, Brett? You probably have your own goals that you're probably.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta harness it, right? And it's gotta make you a little hungry. And so I have that. Mine has always been that, like, this all can go away tomorrow, right? That there is nothing. There's a guarantee in all of our careers that it stays that way. It could be your health. It could be the world. All these things, right? And so that sort of keeps me engaged and attached. And right. And so if you get too, you know, not worried about anything, then you separate yourself. And so, like, the culture challenges we're having with our organization, the people challenges, the client challenges, all of those just sort of they you're going to feel it, right? So every morning you wake up and you got a little bit of a drive. It's coming to the end of the month and I've got to make that sales goal. And so you could be chasing a number, but if you wanted to think about it, right, you're going to find one more client that you're going to make happy because they didn't know they had to be happy, right? So there's a sales piece to it. So it's try to find that positive spin that keeps it moving along. And, but then hopefully you're surrounded by an organization that says, you know, here's the effort I put in, that it's not always, that it's a balanced measure rather than that number. Don't care how or why, just that number. So it's got to feel supported. But then you got to make yourself feel a little hungry about it.
Yeah. And I think you have to understand, whether you have a yearly goal or a monthly goal, what are you going to be doing every day to achieve that? Right. Because you can't just hit it in the last week of a month or a year. Right. And so if you have a really good understanding of, if I make these calls on this day, and I do that every day for 30 days, that consistency is going to pan out. The consistency just always brings everything back to the norm. And so when you can do some really good planning around, here's my conversion, here's the activities that I need to do, the conversations I need to be having, it becomes much easier to just either check that off the list for the day or attempt to catch up, right? But you'll know where you're at, I think.
But Macy, what do you think? What's your thoughts about that? You just presented a budget that you have to own.
I don't even want to think about budgets. It's like 2 weeks. I'm just like, just move past until January 1st or January 3rd. Just keep moving past it. That's where my mind's at right now. I handed out Christmas presents today. So I'm like, don't think about the budget. Just get through the year. I mean, honestly, I don't have a lot. It's shocking. I don't have a lot to say about it for once. But yeah, just trying to put budgets behind. So,
well, Macy's grown in her role. We've all done some really good things and we've clearly embraced the challenge. And so, for Marshall, I think you'll determine in your career if that continues to drive you, right? Neil, you showed a long career in the sales world, which is driven off of sales goals and hitting that target. And some people say, I'll try it, but I'm not going to sustain in that. And so you'll learn if that's going to be what excites you and gets you up every day, or if that fear turns into anxiety, which is, then it just sort of gets destructive. And so we all are going to be pushed and put in situations in our careers that are going to drive us. And testament to this group, we've all really done well with it and pushed it. And so, if you're going to get to that building your golf course someday, right, and that piece, then all this is going to just build the resume and the credentials of a tough world ahead. So you're no doubt going to nail it. And we'll look forward to hearing Dr. Jones, right, building some beautiful landscapes and golf courses someday. So
write his thesis. You're right. Get your thesis on the best golf course designs. Before we go into the next section, do you have any top of mind golf courses that are your favorites?
Ooh, Augusta National will always be close to my heart. TPC Sawgrass for sure. And then Pebble Beach, top three right there.
You golf, I'm assuming.
Yes.
Okay. Have you golfed all three of those courses?
I have not. I've just drooled as I pass by on the interstate. I'm like, oh, that's where Augusta is. And, I just might shed a tear here and there, just dreaming that one day I'll be out there doing something. I don't even have to play. I can just stand out there and I'll be happy.
The You have to play golf to design courses. You think that's a requirement? I'm trying to understand that. I don't play it well, but
I don't think it's a requirement. But you know, it's another level of understanding what you're trying to design. So you kind of get in that golfer's mindset. It might be something that you can understand a little better as to why this hole is laid out this way, and the rest is pretty much drainage at that point.
And I know why they're laid out that way, to make my life miserable and stressed, right? That's why they're all laid out that way. So yeah.
supposed to be a relaxing
sport. Right. I do like walking the courses, the green, like the perfect turf and and like you can't beat that. So, no. But that is a stressful life.
First, whoever designed the sand pits. I mean, why? We don't need those.
No.
Unnecessary.
My golf course, all fairway and green, and you could just putt your whole way through. That would be that's my ideal golf course. Please, Marshall, build me that.
I'll keep that in mind, Brent. I will
think about it. Just it's an option.
I'll just make one hole just for you.
Brett gets a 10% royalty because of that right there. So
yeah. No, you don't have to pick up your ball after 40 strokes or something.
Next time we're watching the PGA Championship played on a Marshall Jones designed course, there'll be that one hole without his spunkers.
Dr. Jones. Dr. Jones.
Dr. Marshall Jones.
Yep.
Of course. All right. Anyway,
every hole has a title, and we'll just call it Brett.
That'll be it. Yeah. That's about right. I'm in. I'll share my rose and thorn, right? My good days and what was bad this week? No thorns this week. I don't think we go and get the kids tomorrow. Their second COVID shot. And so I'm anticipating the second shot, like three kids, just not feeling great at all. So I'm prepared for that, but excited for that whole process to be sort of capped off for now. And then we're doing our Christmas party tomorrow. So we're like you, Macy, it's the holiday spirit is here and that's fun. So, and it's got a little snow out there to make it look like a white Christmas. So I like that. How about you, Luke?
We're in like the home stretch before our winter break. So I'm really looking forward to that. And fingers crossed, it's a winter break with no snow. So we just all get to go take a couple weeks, rest and relax. So we got that going. Things have just been crazy busy, personally and at work, but all good things, a lot of family events and things like that right now because of the holiday season and family, nephews and nieces and sports and whatnot that I've been attending. So thorns, I started doing a little bit of Christmas shopping and I just hate going.
You just started?
Yeah.
Supply chain issues and you just started?
That's why I go in person. And I regret that.
Wow, buddy, you're gonna have a heck of a Christmas this year, then, man. Hang on tight.
Yeah, what can you do about it? But we'll see. But yeah, just going to like the malls and seeing all these people that are just nuts. Like, I mean, it's just nuts when people start going Christmas shopping. Like, it's like every rule is just thrown out the window. So.
Especially this year, right? Or last year, right? These last couple of years. But
it's just like, I mean, it's like constantly, it's like Black Friday at the mall. So I don't really care for it.
Oh, you got to do it online.
Right. Well, you don't have to work. You just sit at the computer, right? Oh, yeah. Account managing. Nope. Buying Christmas gifts. That works just the same.
The balance.
Yeah.
What I'm going to do in place of golfing and boating since it's winter time now.
Nice. How about you, Mason?
Yeah. I'll go. Rose is I got to be Santa today. So that was super fun, handing out my Christmas gifts to my managers. Not a lot of thorns, just, kind of in that same mindset, just get to Christmas and take a week off. So I don't think I have a thorn this week. Things are going well.
I'll go. Things are busy. So it's good that I'm getting projects move forward, but it's also a thorn because it's a little bit stressful. Also have like this like nagging tightness in my calf. So running has taken a backseat for several days now, and it's a pain in the butt. So I'm learning patience. It's always annoying when you have like hard, tough things, like, or just like literal pains that make you not, you can't do something you want to do. So literal thorn in my leg.
There you go. That's a true thorn.
Yeah. So, but anyways, but everything else is good. I don't know, Neil.
Well, I tested positive for COVID Tuesday night, so I've been at less than 100% this week. And yeah, it does suck. But good news, rose of it, is that one of my fiance did not catch COVID, which is important for us because she's fairly compromised from an immune perspective. And two, I was exposed at a wedding that she elected for us to go to and not some event that I chose to go to. So it would be so much worse if it was like, yeah, I went out with the guys and caught it. So
it's all is the room you're in the one that you've been subject to, or no, you get, no,
I live by myself. So I've got, okay. I've got the apartment and right. Yeah. So there's space to spread out at least.
Well, good luck with that, Neil, buddy. Get through that one quickly. Yeah. How about you, Mark? Reed Marshall.
Rose for the week. Me, my wife, my brother, we're going to go down to Roanoke and check out the Illuminites. They have this whole park decorated with some Christmas lights. So finally get some Christmas cheer. Thorn for the week. Still waiting on some parts on my wife's car. And that was supposed to be done yesterday. And now it's backed up until February. So that's always fun.
The reality of the world, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's quite the delay.
Yeah,
it's like
from yesterday. It's going to be a couple months now.
Yeah, exactly. Everything's on back order.
But at least you don't have to go Christmas shopping like Luke, right? Like that.
Yeah, no, I did that in November. We're good. We're good there.
See, Luke. November, Luke. November.
Luke, I haven't done my Christmas shopping either, so don't worry about
hey,
it.
Hey, Brett, I'm starting early. Usually it's like the 20th through the 22nd that I'm starting my Christmas shopping. So I'm 10 days early right now.
All right. Everybody gets the thing that doesn't fit because that's the only size left, right? And you just, it's just a leftover
Christmas. Never once had a complaint about a gift I've given. Huh? So
All right. Thought that matters. Okay.
All right, cool. Well, Marshall, thanks for hopping on with us. Had a good time with you. Also, a big thank you to our listeners. We appreciate your support, and feel free to share, subscribe, rate, give us feedback on the podcast, all the things. So, yeah, everyone else, hope you guys have a good day. I'll see you next time.
See you next week.
Yeah. Adios.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.